This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
We just don't want commercial interest to have too heavy a hand in the future of fair trade. And that's something we think may be happening right now.
Advocates for environmental sustainability would all agree that long-term solutions are going to require changes in consumer behavior. But even the most conscientious consumers sometimes find themselves stumped by confusing labeling and policies that get in the way. My two guests today on Sea Change Radio are each trying to make it easier to be a responsible consumer. First, we'll hear from Rodney North of the Equal Exchange Cooperative, the first organization that promoted socially responsible goods as fair trade. He provides the background and discusses some of the controversies around fair trade labeling of goods. Next, we talk with the Sierra Club's Evan Gillespie, who's leading a campaign to push for energy reform in California, including a solar bill of rights. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Rodney North. He's the answer man for Equal Exchange, which is a worker cooperative that originally introduced fair trade foods and beverages to the American consumer in the 80s. Rodney, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Alex, thank you very much for having me on.
First, why don't you give us a little bit of a background on Equal Exchange and the version of fair trade that was originally planted in American consumers' minds?
Sure. So we were founded in 1986. We're a worker cooperative. We're a fair trade and organic foods importer. Everything that we bring in, all the coffee, the tea, chocolate, bananas, olive oil, is a fair trade. And most of it's organic, by the way. And so we were the first to bring in fair trade food, starting with coffee, to American grocery stores. Fair trade had a longer history going back with crafts and textiles. So we helped to bring it into the grocery stores. And now, since then, it's something we're all pretty much familiar with. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. In the United States alone, it represents over $1 billion in retail sales every year. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was the origins of fair trade, where it was focused entirely upon helping to provide market access to cooperatives of small-scale farmers. Well, not everybody today shares that original vision, and we're encouraging a return such that fair trade, again, focuses on serving these small-scale farmers.
And that has to do with this organization, Fair Trade USA, formerly known as Transfair USA. Maybe you can give our listeners a little bit of a background on the recent developments in that area.
Sure. So the dominant fair trade certifier in the world is a group called Fair Trade International, and they're represented in each of the major importing nations, the United States, the UK, Germany, Canada, by what are called national initiatives. And so Fair Trade USA, going back now 14 years, was their representative in the United States. They ran the certification labeling scheme that a lot of people are familiar with. They would issue this black and white seal that would go onto a lot of products. And more recently, this is in December, Fair Trade USA broke ranks from the global umbrella group. And when they did that, they also said that they would introduce new standards, ostensibly to expand the reach of fair trade. However, we, Equal Exchange, and a lot of the other fair trade pioneers and advocacy groups, were objecting to this move, both to Fair Trade USA leaving the international body, but especially these new standards, which we feel very strongly represent a dilution of fair trade, and that could actually work very much against the interest of those small scale farmers who very much helped to build the movement and who historically have been the focus of fair trade efforts.
So what kind of farmers and in what countries are affected by this kerfuffle over who's the real fair trade?
Potentially every farmer in the global south is affected. Fair trade is best known in the coffee category, but increasingly cacao, sugar, banana farmers, citrus growers, and others are participating in the fair trade system. And even though currently maybe 1% of farmers in the global south are benefiting from fair trade, most of them are potentially eligible. And so the stakes are high about what's the future of fair trade. Maybe some other day we can talk about fair trade for North American farmers. That's a whole interesting discussion unto itself. So right now, the ones who are most likely going to be affected are coffee, sugar, cacao farmers. These are the ones who have always, they have had exclusive access to the fair trade seal. The rules are a little bit different for banana and tea growers. In those categories, the farmer co-ops have been competing with plantations. The plantations have been able to get the fair trade seal as well. This is something that we at Equal Exchange oppose. However, with the these new ideas being propagated by Fairtrade USA, with cacao, coffee, and sugar, plantations there too could begin to get the seal. And so they'd be in direct competition with these farmer co-ops. And so whereas a large coffee importer might be buying from farmer co-ops now for their fair trade coffee, they could begin switching those imports and getting it from, you know, mega plantations in Brazil and elsewhere. And we just really don't want to see that. And we want consumers, but also informed retailers, you know, the grocery buyers in your local food co-op and grocery store, to be aware of these issues and to make sure that no matter what happens, that they continue to source from the farmer co-ops, you know, the co-ops who helped to build the movement and who we think are rightfully the focus of fair trade efforts.
Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts and other big coffee vendors didn't just wake up one day and decide it was going to be really cool to start buying from small farmer co-ops. Why don't you give us a little bit of a history of how it developed back with your organization and where we are today?
That's interesting because the arc of our story and the story of fair trade, I think, is similar to what we've seen in all kinds of categories, whether it's sustainable timber, recycled paper products, and certainly with organic foods. You have a small group, in this case, let's talk about Equal Exchange and other small importers. And back in the 80s, we could see that the coffee business wasn't working for the coffee farmer, that they had the highest risk, they had the least leverage in the market, they had the least to show for their work, whereas all the money was being made by the coffee roasters, the importers, the stores, and sometimes large businesses within the global south who are making the money buying coffee cheap from the farmer and then exporting it to Europe and North America. And at Equal Exchange, we knew it didn't have to be this way and that we could redistribute the coffee wealth in a way that respected the hard work of the coffee farmers. And one of the things that that would require is going straight to the source. So we became our own importer and we're importing, and we didn't want to just buy from anybody, but we wanted to work with the small farmers who had banded together to create their own businesses, cooperatives, where they could collect the raw coffee, process it, do quality control, do the exporting, truck it to market. And so that instead of just being the grower of a raw material and getting a very low price for an unprocessed product, they would be creating a business, doing more of the value-added work, getting information about markets and prices, and they would be in a better position to bargain for themselves. And back in the 80s, you can imagine the kind of pushback there would be. Well, these farmers aren't ready for prime time. They're not ready to serve the market. They can't do this processing. They're not professional enough, et cetera. And you fast forward 20 years, now people are falling all over themselves to talk about, yes, we work directly with farmers. You know, we work with these six cooperatives around the world. And that's been very encouraging. And you see that with these other categories. I should add that when we started, not only did people think that you couldn't work with coffee, small coffee farmers or cooperatives, but they were also saying that, well, what are you trying to do? This fair trade idea. They would say, A, it's not a problem. This is just how the market works. Get used to it. B, what you're proposing can't work. You can't pay more for this coffee. You'll go out of business. C, that the market, there isn't a market for this idea. People don't care where their food comes from. So get over it. And so not only are people now, coffee roasters are very happy to talk about their relationships with farmers and with cooperatives, but now it's taken as a given. Well, of course people care about the farmers and the farm workers, and they care about how this was grown and how it was traded. So that's been encouraging. And we just don't want commercial interest to have too heavy a hand in the future of fair trade. And that's something we think may be happening right now.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the answer man from Equal Exchange, Rodney North. Rodney, let's turn to the certification process and some of the issues surrounding the seal of approval of fair trade that goes into many products. Your organization, Equal Exchange, is best known for importing coffee, tea, chocolate, and bananas. Now, Fairtrade USA, I assume, certifies many other products. Where are your motivations parallel, and where do you diverge?
We agree on the idea that you need this third party to verify that a product is what the company says it is. And so there's that. We agree that we want there to be more fair trade. You know, right now, about 5% of the U.S. coffee market is being imported on fair trade terms. We both would like to really pump up that number. One of the things we disagree about is, well, what are the constraints? Fairtrade USA contends that, well, if you can start certifying the coffee plantations, that would increase the availability of Fairtrade coffee. More would then come into the country, and so by extent, Fairtrade would expand. We push back and say that already you have these hundreds of farmer cooperatives around the world. Currently, they only sell a third of their coffee to the Fairtrade market. And two-thirds they have to sell on the regular market. So there's already an abundant supply. Supply is not the constraint. And if it's not, and these plantations get into the fray, they're going to be competing for sales with these farmer co-ops. And so the success of the plantations will come at the expense of the small farmer co-ops. So that's one of the places where we disagree.
And how can consumers differentiate between the products that you're importing and the ones that have the Fairtrade USA label or certification on them? Are your products certified by Fairtrade USA as well?
Most of our packaging, you won't see a prominent label. We're using IMO, IMO. It's a Swiss certifier. And like on our coffee packaging, you'll see small print on the side. we're de-emphasizing the label because we're trying to get greater focus on our brand. On our bananas, you will see, this is one of the new seals you and I were talking about. So Fairtrade International, they are going to stay active in the U.S. market. And so they're introducing the label that people see in Canada and that shoppers see in Europe. It's blue, green, and black. So we've started to put that seal on our bananas, for example. But the best thing regarding our products is just to look for our red rectangle. That's our logo. And in terms of more general advice for the conscientious shopper or retailer, we're encouraging them in a way to go back to the 80s before there was a certification and to really get to know the brands. Find out which brands are dedicated to the small farmer co-ops in keeping with the original fair trade vision. And so besides Equal Exchange, it includes people like Divine, Dr. Bronner's, Sweet Earth Organics. There are a chocolate brand in California, Just Coffee in Wisconsin. Find out those who are going to stay dedicated to the farmer cooperatives. And as a part of that, we've launched a authentic fair trade campaign. And we're asking people to stand with the small farmers. And if they go to our website, equalexchange.coop, they can find all the information there.
The answer man for Equal Exchange, Rodney North, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Evan Gillespie. He's the campaign director for the Sierra Club's My Generation campaign. Evan, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
First, tell our listeners what the My Generation campaign is all about.
Sure. So we have a vision for California. We think that by 2020, we can generate 30% of California's energy or electricity needs through local clean energy sources, things like energy efficiency, rooftop solar. And so, look, the governor has got a great vision for the state. He's put out a great plan. He wants to start with 12 gigawatts of distributed generation or local clean energy. We think that's a great start. We think, frankly, we can blow by it. And in doing so, bring better health our kids and our communities. We can create better jobs here in California. We can help put some money back in our wallets by helping customers, homes, businesses, schools save money. And so the My Generation campaign, our big goal, like I said, is to make sure that 30% of our energy comes from power in our communities, by clean power in our communities by 2020.
And so what kind of a campaign is My Generation? Is it an internet campaign or you have events? Why don't you tell us how people can get involved in it?
Sure. So like most of the Sierra Club campaigns, it's a grassroots campaign that has a combination or really is focused on a bottom-up strategy of building organic demand and really not even building, frankly. It's there in the communities now. What we need to do is really tap into it and unleash it to make sure that from every corner of the state, the demand for local clean energy is being heard loud and clear by our decision makers in Sacramento and at the Utilities Commission and elsewhere.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Evan Gillespie of the Sierra Club. Evan, you've also worked on the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. Give us an overview of those efforts as well, if you can.
The goal of the Beyond Coal campaign, we've been at this for about 10 years now, and we've got really three key goals to that campaign. The first is to stop proposals for new coal-fired power plants. Back during the early years of the Bush administration, the vice president and his friends in the fossil fuel industry got together, and they set about writing the 2005 energy bill. One of the proposals that came out of that was, at the time, a call for 150, and ultimately that number grew to 200 new coal-fired power plants around the country. So the first goal of the campaign was to make sure that we stopped those proposals dead in their tracks. And in the last few weeks, we announced the defeat of the 169th coal plant. So we've been pretty successful to date, just going community by community through the country and making sure that there's staunch opposition to the construction of new coal-fired power plants. The second phase was to look at the existing roughly 600 coal-fired power plants we have around the country, make sure that those are transitioned to cleaner, safer, cheaper options. And then third, we're now increasingly engaged in the fight over keeping coal in the ground and out of foreign markets. And so the way I like to think of the My Generation campaign is we're really, starting in California, really trying to put some new emphasis on what exactly the beyond part of Beyond Coal looks like. And, you know, like I said, our vision at the start, we think we need a lot of different solutions. But one thing we'd really like to see take off in California and really grow from what's a great starting place today is local clean energy.
Sea Change Radio is sponsored by Redwood Hill Farm, a family-owned and operated award-winning humane certified goat dairy farm and organic creamery located in Sonoma County, California. Go to redwoodhill.com to learn more about Redwood Hill Farm's extensive line of natural goat milk dairy products. This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Evan Gillespie of the Sierra Club. What is the solar bill of rights that you're pushing to have Governor Jerry Brown sign here in California?
Right. So, look, the problem right now is that big utilities are really pulling out all the stops to halt the growth of particularly rooftop solar. And we have a very different vision for what the California economy should look like, where folks should get their power from. It's quite a contrast. And so we developed the clean solar, the clean energy bill of rights to really demonstrate the contrast in our visions. You know, some of the things that we're calling for in the bill of rights, for example, we think that everybody should have the right to capture sun that falls on your roof, the wind that blows across your land, capture that and be able to turn that into energy savings for your own home, or to be able to sell that power back to the utility. And as I mentioned before, utilities are pulling out all the stops to try to limit folks' options from doing things like that. We also think that everybody should have access to local clean energy, that should be a universal right, and that whether you are a hospital trying to bring down your energy bill, whether you're an entrepreneur who's trying to start a new business, local clean energy provides a lot of different either financial, economic, a whole range of benefits. And we think that those benefits should be distributed equitably throughout the state, and that everybody should have access to them.
And what does it mean specifically in terms of financial incentives for homeowners and also renters?
Right now, the primary vehicle for putting for getting local rooftop solar up in California is a policy called net energy metering, or sometimes referred to as a solar rollover program, where you essentially roll back the meter on your at your home or at your business. You install solar panels and you're able to offset the vast majority of your energy bill through the power that's generated on your roof. For the power that you don't use, it gets fed back into the grid, and you get a credit for that you can use on another month when you know, the sun might not shine as much. And so that's been the primary vehicle to date, and frankly, it's provided thousands of jobs for Californians, millions of dollars in savings for customers. But we're just getting started. And so one of the things that we'd like to see is we'd like to see this program dramatically expanded to make sure that, you know, that this is something that really can reach every community. We've seen a lot of growth over the last couple of years in the middle class with the advent of solar leasing, where now in California, you can actually put solar on your roof for zero money down and offset your energy bill for the next 20 years. So we have a great program in place. It's really starting to take off. But as I mentioned before, local clean energy, particularly rooftop solar, poses a real threat in, to utilities. It's a disruptive technology, and it's one that utilities right now are fighting to rein in and to limit the further expansion of.
So tell us a little bit about the campaign against it from either the utility side and their allies. What are some of the arguments they're making to Californians?
You know, for example, in California, a couple examples come to mind. In San Diego last fall, a local utility there, San Diego Gas and Electric, proposed a new solar tax for customers to try to essentially tax customers who've gone either installed solar in the past and certainly looking forward to new customers who are considering putting solar on their roof. Would have added a really costly fee that would have put the price of solar out of the range of a lot of different customers in that market. And so that's just one example of how utilities are working to really try to slow down the growth of rooftop solar. Right now in California, we also have a cap on the amount of rooftop solar, really our net energy metering that we produce across the state. And utilities are working to really artificially keep that cap low. And we're at a point right now where in the next year, we're going to hit that cap. And if we don't do something about it, if we don't really fix the way that it's calculated and get a more accurate interpretation, or we don't lift the cap, the industry is going to come to a halt.
Is that cap fairly standard in most states, or is that unique to California? And why is there a cap? That seems kind of antithetical to the push towards clean energy.
Sure. Well, a cap is not uncommon state to state. It varies, obviously, from from different states. And in California, over the last 10 years, California was really one of the first states, or the first state, to really pioneer these types of programs. And so we've expanded the cap a number of times over the last decade. And at every turn, we've had to bitterly fight the utilities on this. The argument from the utility side is that the same sort of scare tactics that they've used with renewable energy in general, which is that it's variable. And that they can't incorporate large amounts of energy that comes onto the grid, as the clouds part. Again, simply not true. We can really look and have a very clear understanding of when these resources are going to come online, when the sun is going to shine. And so the planning, I think, is a little overstated on the part of the utilities. But that's their main argument, is I think that they can't deal with the variability.
So in terms of the goals of the My Generation campaign, what will make this a success in your mind, and what could it mean for other states besides California?
Sure. So there are a number of ways that we're going to evaluate success on this with the campaign. I mean, at the highest possible level, again, we believe that 30% of our power in California can come be generated in local communities by 2020. So that's at the highest level, that's what we're aiming to do. There are a lot of metrics along the way. The governor's put forward an ambitious goal, 12 gigawatts of rooftop solar and other small generation clean energy technologies. And we think that that's a great start. Certainly expanding the solar rollover program, whereby people can offset their energy bill by putting solar up on their roof, or expanding the solar cashback programs we have in the state, are two great great next steps to help us, one, get to the governor's goal, but then surpass that. And then there's a whole host of work that we need to do around energy efficiency to help homes and businesses, and really the state in general, waste less energy. And that looks like strengthening building codes, expanding access to financing for businesses who want to undergo an energy efficiency retrofit. There are a lot of different opportunities there as well.
Evan Gillespie of the Sierra Club, thanks so much for joining me on SeaChange Radio.
Great, thanks for having me. Sway the future to the
past and find what will endure. You've been listening to SeaChange Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music from Jimi Hendrix, Aretha Franklin, and The Police.
SeaChange Radio is made possible by support from Farm Fresh to You Organic Produce Delivery Service, connecting people to farms and leading the progressive change in America's food system. To learn more, go to farmfreshtoyou.com. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.